You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by Football Stadium Prince. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case Elder scenario for City right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally redeems himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself. Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
Another goal!
It is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
If you have any doubts as to whether or not you're living in a simulation, you better kick them to the curb because we are about to prove them wrong. Things are about to get very real. This is The People's Pitch, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City SC. As always, I am Nate, joined by my partner, Johnny Business, John Bizworm. John, has your mood improved yet, or are you kind of maintaining a low simmering level of disappointment like I am?
Nate, here's how I'm going to answer your question without answering your question.
You love to do it.
Yep. It takes me at least 3 days to get over a loss in men's league soccer at 41 years old.
Okay.
So that hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling you on that one. Well, we're going to start with the good news, John. The UPSL team is playoff bound after a statement win, which is great to hear. And then we're going to get to the tough part of the show, as both the NPSL and USL2 squads were played off the field in two different countries, which is a city first.
Yeah, so let's rip off that Band-Aid and get to it, Nate. Let's not dilly-dally.
Nope.
Let's go. So, as far as the UPSL is concerned, this one was literally a no-doubter from the moment that we got up to the booth, Nate.
Yeah.
Considering that Abusa FC had 7 players warming up, and it took till about 8 minutes before kickoff to field 11. Then, as the game started, like 3 or 4 more guys showed up, and they were coming from like all different entrances of the field. Like, one guy came from the fence by the team, one guy came from like the other end by the park. They're just coming out of the woodwork. I would say it was very UPSL things that game.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially it being the last game of the season. But honestly, like, how do you not know you have a game? You know, I don't know. As far as the actual game goes, the Futures boys got an early stamp on this match. And by the way, it was a treat to be in the booth with you, Nate.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, you know, it's always a good time. We find that we're just like, we do this instead of actually being like, oh shit, a goal was scored.
Yeah, we were just talking about the team, like, oh, and then, you know, adding a lot of backstory to it, and then it's like, oh, something's happening. We should get excited.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Futures boys, like I said, got an early stamp on this match with what I thought was a really, really great link-up play between your central three of Duraj, Johnny Bear, and Wackerfuss. And then the
Wackerfuss,
strong front.
John, I barely know her.
Yeah. We're at 6 minutes in, and I had the under. I thought you would have gotten there quicker.
I forgot to say it on the stream, so I had to say it in the pod.
That's fine. His mom probably isn't listening to this one, so it's probably a good call on your part. The interchangeability of those three and their control and the early on in the game, and their service and delivery to, I think, the strong front three of Walsh, Kerms, Ramsey, Urukandu, and Mutu caused literal fits for the visitors. Ramsey opened up the scoring with goals in the 16th and 32nd minute before picking up a knock, which I think hampered him for the final few minutes of the half. And I think actually until he was subbed off, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then Walsh Kern capped off a goal to make it 3 in the first 45. I don't think that there was ever a chance that the Futures weren't going to win this game.
No, I don't think so either, but it was good to see the team get out to that start that they did and put their stamp on it and make it, I mean, pretty much put it out into the world that there was no doubt that they were only thinking about winning this game.
Well, yeah, and then putting out there like, and it's not like, you know, some people are like, think that our club has a little bit of privilege, and I'm sure that comes off like that sometimes, but like, we weren't like just given a UPSL playoff spot. Like the kids earned it, and they show, and like, you know, like what a great way to cap, put a capper on the season, go undefeated in the regular season with a statement first half like that. But going into the second half, Nate, it got even more stretched for the visitors. I mean, their only chances were Route 1 soccer right up the middle, and they didn't have a whole lot going on other than that. And it typically was like up to one guy. So with that the game opening up, Walsh Kern again for the second time on the day in the 47th minute, and then Gavin Watkinson and Carlos Robles, who were both substitutes, came on, put the final stamp on things in the last 15 minutes of the second frame. And it was funny because we joked on the stream that how ruthless JJ was, substituting both Ramsey and Walsh off, both on hat tricks. But I mean, hey, if you don't put that third one in the time you're given, that's next man up.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Ray, to be fair, Ray, he did give Ramsey the rest of the first half after he got his knock. Like, he had a full 45 minutes to score three goals and he couldn't do it. So, oh well, might as well sit you down.
Yeah, man. Can't see it.
Every week, John, it seems like there's someone different that's stepping up for those young Crows. Like, we saw Ramsey continue the hot streak. We've been talking about him for a couple weeks now, but there's two new names that we really haven't talked about that stepped up on Saturday, and both of us picked them as our players of the game. You want to talk about them?
Yeah. So Daraj Basnett, he was with the group in the winter session. So like, I got a good chance at seeing Daraj firsthand when I was mentor coaching. And he's on the younger side of things, so you're gonna see him again. If he'll have us back, let's put it that way. you'll see him again. But Daraj is not the biggest guy on the field, not the fastest guy on the field, but he's probably the toughest guy on the field, to be honest, in his small, slight frame. In the middle of the field, just doing everything you want out of a six. Getting heavy into the tackle, getting the ball, reading what's around him when he has the ball and when he doesn't have the ball, and then giving it to the other guys that are open, and nothing flashy. But I thought that like he was the heartbeat in that first half for sure.
Yeah, and how about Walsh, John? We mentioned that he had those two goals. I think he had another assist to make it a gentleman's hat trick, I guess, if you want to call it that. But we have not talked about him at all this season.
Yeah. So Walsh is a graduate of the first year of the Futures program. So we've seen him before. When I say we, I mean me. but Walsh he came out of high school and he was a target striker because he's a little bit taller. You would think maybe more of that back to goal guy, but he's got some speed and he has that silky smooth touch. I mean, on that goal he had, the one where I think it was actually Daraj who played a ball into him that he took out of the air, cuts it back behind his leg, and then slots it home after he beats the keeper with his third touch. Fleet feet for a big tall guy, as well as speed, like I mentioned. And like, what a great addition. I know he came in a little bit late. We talked about how he goes to school out in California. I know he came in a little bit late. I think it was more of a case of he hadn't planned on playing with us and then came home, and then JJ did the real smart thing of contacting him when we were actually a little bit low on players due to some injuries with the Futures program, and snapping up a guy like Walsh Kern is a really good one to get. So I thought that Walsh, the one thing that I really liked about Walsh, and we talked about it on the broadcast, excuse me, is his willingness to be interchangeable with Ramsey and Moo. Like, you saw the three of them kind of, you know, occupying each other's space. Mm-hmm. And then kind of, you know, interchanging as far as where they were coming from. And I thought that kind of caused problems for Abusa FC. I mean, they had a lot of problems, but this one I thought definitely was a problem for them. And Walsh was the one who was kind of spearheading that. So with that win, actually, I'll pause. Is there anything you wanted to mention about Walsh?
No, not at all. I think you covered it, man. I was just super impressed with, for like you said, for a big kid, he's able to really bring the ball down with his feet, like out of the air. I thought he was dangerous on the attack, very aggressive on the attack, right? But still looking to find those crosses and to find those, to do duty on kind of both sides of the ball, right? Not only was he making those runs and trying to get in the goal, but when he did find himself on the wing in dangerous mm-hmm. spots, he was more than willing to put the ball in the box, and that's exactly everything we need from one of the front three.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that win, it was up to everyone's favorite newcomer by name only, Aston Villa, to do their jobs versus Vlora, who are ahead on 1 point with a game at hand after this result. But they couldn't do it, man. And no. that places Minneapolis City futures as the second seed in the playoffs and caps off a second consecutive season, undefeated season. And I think that goes, we talked a little bit about it last week, but I think that goes kind of underrated as far as the fact that these are 17 to 20 year olds. Like, I would say maybe six of the guys on the roster aren't youth soccer eligible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me, John, is we've said it over and over again, but when this season started, you just wonder, like, oh man, how are these literal kids gonna respond to a real semi-pro league, as lower league as the UPSL has proven to be, organizationally with some of these teams. Like, these guys are not messing around. You saw the guy come out for Ebisua on Saturday. He looked like the Incredible Hulk, right? But we were still able to
he was like three Dirages.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with the UPSL, and especially our Midwest West, and hopefully I'm assuming it's going to be the same for the rest of the league around the country from what we've seen last year in the playoffs, is like, you never know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. You might get another squad of young talent like we have from Long Island, or you might get a team that's kind of semi-professionally, like organizationally put together, because the guy that owns the club owns a carpet company and he is able to put guys up and dorm them for the, board them for the summer. So you never know.
Like the New York Contour we lost to last year, that are like, they were full pro before they went to the UPSL, and they're all the same players still.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you never know what you're going to get. So I think these kids have done a good job against adversity or dealing with adversity, and they've done a good job proving themselves at this level. And if this is what the Futures program puts out, and this is the level that the Futures program can continue to compete at year in and year out, I think that's the UPSL is a great spot for them developmentally and for the fans.
Absolutely.
So the playoff news is in, John, and this makes no sense to me, but I guess the boys are going to be playing FC Minneapolis. They're the third seed, so they finished third place in the Midwest West. And I guess the way that this playoff works is that the second and the third seed play, and then they will play Vlora to advance potentially. I don't know, but that's going to happen Wednesday. So that's Wednesday, June 22nd at 7 p.m. up at the Old Bird's Nest at Osseo High School, the home of FC Minneapolis. We have a better seed, but FC Minneapolis has the home field advantage. Whack. But that's all the news we have for now on the playoffs. But keep an eye on the Twitter. That's at MPLS City Futures for any additional info that we might find, if you want to get up there and support the Young Crows.
Do we ever find out if Ian Cindy made it out of the hospital?
I didn't personally check.
From his shoulder, catastrophic shoulder injury.
At least we know how to go at him.
Like, well, do we know that in that picture they put on social media, was he breathing?
You can only hope.
Yeah, I don't know. So they'll be without their self-proclaimed heartbeat. So yeah. Who knows? Who knows what to think of those guys?
The winged wizard. What is it?
Yeah, the winged wizard. Enough about enough about them. Screw those guys. More about us.
More about us. Well, John, last time the team that was first place in the NPSL North came to town, Minneapolis City had the luxury of throwing the kitchen sink at them with mostly full access to the entire USL 2 and NPSL rosters, minus a few guys who had only committed to the team if they could play USL 2 or guys that had gone home to visit their families. This time, the USL 2 squad had, well, we had to send a team up to Canada for a long weekend spent in Thunder Bay and Winnipeg, and it turns out that was not the ideal situation for results in the NPSL squad. Bit by that injury bug again, veteran forward Nick Hutton, who was going to make his debut on the season, was a late scratch due to his injuries. And Charlie Adams, who I think was the star of the show for the first 20 minutes of the game, gave City a really nice box-to-box performance early. He goes down in the first half, and he's helped off the field. What is that? What's that make your count, John? How many City players are out with injuries this year so far?
So it was 22 players going into that match with without Chuck, and then eventually Abai picking up a knock as well. So 24 So 24 total from our senior roster, which is about half the players, seeing that we have 50 signed players in the senior roster.
Yeah, not ideal.
Not great, Bob.
Nope. So after Charlie goes down, I'm going to say that the midfield had a lot of work to do. Right, we had to figure out roles. We put Tyler David in as a deep setting midfield who could hopefully double as maybe a third center back, but that's really not, it doesn't seem like that was the instructions that he was given.
I thought he played well.
I thought so too. I thought he was great. He's a great anchor in the middle of the field. I think that defensive,
he got forward.
Yeah, he did get forward, and I think that you know, the problem was is that meant sometimes other midfielders had to get back, and that led to a penalty. Yep. Yeah. He came back really, really, really hard and really fast on a Med City player who was already inside the box. So that was a bad challenge, I think, by Lionel Vang, right? He was tracking back to the fend and he ran right into the dude. And that's when the wheels came off for City after that penalty. About an hour later, this team was looking at a 5-1 loss, thanks to two penalties on the day. The second one coming from a handball as a player instinctively raised his hands to protect his face.
Dude, I don't know. I thought it hit his face.
Yeah, I did too. But Dan Mick was down there. He said definitely hands. But still, like, it's coming for his face.
Then there was the chance for us to get a penalty back, which would have helped kind of stop the bleeding. But their player apparently was allowed to lay down in the box with the ball in his hands. And then they pulled it out for an indirect free kick where half the ball was actually on the line inside the box. So I don't know really how that works, but anyways, that's not the reason why the total 5-1 loss, but some weirdness.
Yeah. But also some truly dismal defensive play. I think let's save our thoughts on this game, John, until we cover off on the USL 2 results, which were also not great. That NPSL game turned out to be the meat in what was an absolute shit sandwich for Minneapolis City. The USL 2 team dropped both games in Canada Friday and Sunday to the tune of 3-1 and 4-1. In Thunder Bay, City took a 1-1 draw into what was like the 80th minute before just absolutely falling apart. 83rd minute or something, right?
83rd minute.
Yeah. Before they absolutely fell apart, they gave up two late goals. John, what went wrong in those final minutes?
Okay. Well, I'm just getting over this one as I talk to you about how long it takes me to get over a men's league loss. So we've talked about this how many times this season, Nate. We go into small stretches of games where it's literally like for like in talent with the team that we're looking across the field from.
Yeah.
But then we turn off, and the quality in this league just makes us pay. Like, and it was the same story. We changed up some players at that given moment of the game, kind of trying to chase back to get that second goal. Went with some more attacking minded players, and not his fault, but young defender Boston University's Andrew Straczynski, who is typically an MPSL player, in his first year with the club, he got beat over the top, and he did a really good job of tracking back, but the guy was just had two steps on him. Excuse me. Guy was able to get a shot on, Martin saves it, but Ben Hughes falls asleep and lets the defender, the forward on the rebound right in, like, go goal side of him inside the 6 yard box. The guy just taps it in. So yeah. It's, then you're like your job is not to let a guy be between you and the goal. You know, that's what we talk about, is mental switch offs. And I mean, Martin's, you know, give up four or three goals in that game. And I don't think any of them were his fault, to be honest. So needing to chase, we put in all of our attacking players we possibly had available. And we were able to get some chances, but no blood drawn. And then another mistake at the back. Saw Jack Berry misjudge like a looping cross from outside the 18, where he he's a big dude. He jumped for it, just jumped too late. And then it went right over his head, and their forward was just sitting there in the back post, tapped it in. So, again, nothing Martin could do. It was real hard watching that one unfold, to be honest with you, as mm-hmm. we played well, Nate, and then the scoreline, again, does not tell the story. So it's kind of like we're at this point in the season where it's like, this just kind of must be our fate this year. And we'll talk about that stuff in a little bit. But
not a great feeling.
It wasn't a great feeling. And and the people I'm watching the game with are like, this doesn't look like you guys. And I was like, it sure doesn't, Bob. You know, but we're better than this. But it just is what's happening right now. And we talked about it. It's what happens in soccer. So we'll get into that a little bit more in a little bit.
Yeah. And we came out, John, on Sunday, I think, on a much better foot in Winnipeg against Manitoba. Like, City was on the attack early. We drew a penalty that unfortunately was saved, but then almost immediately we proceeded to keep the pressure on. Bernard scores in the eighth. And for a minute, it looked like, oh, yeah, Minneapolis City is just going to be able to walk right into the opposing 18-yard box willy-nilly and just shoot whenever we want. Had anything changed tactically from Friday to give us these chances? Like, because this kind of offense and this kind of confidence has not been a signature of the USL squad quite yet this year.
Well, let me put it this way too: Sidney Toome was just roasting the guy.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah. So
Sidney Toome got pulled down right for the penalty.
Yeah,
that was saved. Bernard also waltzes right into the box and is able to basically dribble half their defense before. Before scoring,
who was on the other side wing? Was it Susie? Shoot, I forget who it was. Whoever was the opposite side winger, he also had a couple chances. But to go back to your question, nothing really of note changed outside of, like, I call it like a semi decent player rotation to give some of the guys who played on Friday and have kind of been shouldering heavier minutes this summer a break. Mm-hmm. And you know, with that injury bug that smashed us, it was probably not the strongest lineup we could have put in with the group that went. But we were beg, borrowing and stealing from each other for players. But the side still had quality, and it showed it in the first 18 minutes of the game. The frustrating thing for me on this one wasn't just that I had to watch it with my father on Father's Day, and he. For 90 minutes told me how things should be going. I'm like, God damn it, Dad. I know I have two eyes. I can see it, but it was just the game was giving us quick counterattacks through the direct pathways, a higher line of pressure showed we can cause fits on their back line. It's what got us the goal. Aiden O'Driscoll up high, picked the pocket of the defender. That guy didn't want the ball at all day. Every time he got it, he either kicked it long or he played it back to his goalkeeper. So we saw that pressuring that guy or pressuring the guys around him and inviting the pass to him and us being able to kick it off him worked. Well, did you fall out of your chair, Nate?
No, right, I'm good. There? Sorry. The dog tried to jump up on the couch.
So we saw that was working as well. But then all of a sudden we were like, let's just go back to just keeping the ball side to side, mm-hmm. going backwards. And it was like, that is what invites us to get nicked and the other team counter on us. Like, we can't go back to that. Don't go back to that. and at some point for me, Nate, it's the guys on the field have to see what is and is not working and keep going at what's working until the well dries. then you can go back to the possession and you can move the ball around until you find that next opportunity to open up. And then you bleed that fucker dry until it dries up.
Yep.
So it's like, for me, that's a player thing and it's not a coaching thing, because the coaches can only do so much to provide instruction and course correction and direction. But at that point, you might as well just like plug a joystick in the back of these guys and do it yourself. You know what I mean? Like, players need to realize how to adjust on the fly. And yes, it's okay to follow a system of things that work, but if us back to goal or back to their goal in our defensive third has caused us problems with getting nicked right there, and then we have disadvantaged numbers, then go long, short, long. Little kids do it. Like, it's okay. It's okay to do that. So if it's working, if that's what we do all game, then I have a problem. But like, yeah, I don't want to belabor it anymore.
No, I mean, and I get it too. Like you said, why not just keep going and do what's working? Right. I mean, we, like you said, Sydney, Bernard, the other winger, able to walk all over that Manitoba defense early until we decided not to, for some reason, until we decided a one goal lead was enough or something. Because Sydney just decided, I mean, why would you decide to just stop doing that? The city ended up spending the rest of the game chasing that scoreline. Manitoba equalized in the 15th on what was a really nice free kick.
I was just going to say that their goal, that free kick, I think Kalen was a little far away from his wall. Maybe two, a half step, full step, a full giant step over, kind of closer to his wall. I think he would have been able to get a hand on that, but the guy put it top in. So, I mean, like, yeah, I tip my hat to that one. But the other one, it's like, the other one's like another goddamn it goal. Like, goddamn it, this again? Fuck.
Yeah. And City never found that attacking ability that we had in the first, 10 minutes of the game, really, for the rest of the game. We walked off the field 4-1 losers. Like, Manitoba scores twice as many goals against us than they'd scored all season up to this point. And you got to wonder, like, why? How? So UPSL aside, John, that's three games in one weekend that were about as bad as City has performed on the field in years, if not ever. Mm-hmm. And after Sunday, when we were both just shaking our heads in our basements, you said, hey, we're not this bad, but we sure as shit are playing like it. And I think what you're saying is, hey, on both the USL2 side and even sort of the NPSL, sometimes, depending on who's on the roster, we've got some of the top players from Minnesota that play in really good D1 programs and even D3 programs, or at least are bound for them, are going there next year, right, as graduating seniors. So what's the problem? Why can't the USL2 team get results when they hit the field?
All right, you ready, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we were talking about early. Like, we're getting real in this podcast. At this point, I feel like we can be an outlet for some of the frustration that fans might feel, and still you and I are two of the most ardent City supporters that there are. So I'm not super concerned with walking any sort of fair weather fan line here, but we got to ask some tough questions.
We're also going to be the release valve for the players too. I think, I think, like, no disrespect to anyone on our roster or our staff, but like, things aren't great right now.
Yep.
So, like, we've clearly underlined that. But as far as your question, so we know, Nate, winning's contagious. We've seen it a lot around here in the recent past. This is our first dose of just how equally, if not more, contagious losing can be.
Yep.
And it's almost like, With the NPSL team, it's been two steps forward, four steps back. And with the USL team, it's been a half step forward, three steps back. So it's been like, we've been trying to, but like, you just, losing is the worst stink you can get on yourself that you can't get off. And you're right. We have a lot of talented players around here, but even the most talented players on a losing streak always have that second guess of doubt in their heads when the ball's rolled out. And it's really hard to shake that off, Nate, like, and to get your mojo back. I've been there before as a player. Like, you work so damn hard to course correct things in training. It feels right. And then you go out there and you play hard. But then there's always that doubt in your head, like, we're not doing enough. We need to be, you know, like you're forcing it, yep. right? And there's literally nothing you can do about it. Like, I've been on teams where, like, 9 out of 10 times, you only face them once. 9 out of 10 times, you blow the doors off those guys. But on that day, because of what happened in the previous matchups, you're like, you got the stink on you, and you can't get it off. And I think we got the stink on us right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just where we are right now. We got the stink on us. But I think it's a good my last thought on this one is I think it's actually a good learning curve, to be honest. It's what the other side of the coin feels like. So what you have to do is fight hard to try to figure it out, but remember the taste, the smell, the sounds of all of it. And once we regroup as an organization, as individual players, and we fix what we can fix it going into next season, never let it happen again. As soon as you start smelling that stink, start seeing the things, the bubbles boil, start hearing the sounds, you cut the snake, the head off the snake. So remember it and move past it, because every club on earth has gone through this. And now it's our opportunity to make it only a this year thing.
I like
my last thing, maybe a this year thing, or maybe a year to date thing. We got a lot of games left.
Yeah.
We can move forward, or we have to move forward at the end of the year.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we're going to get back to that. There are, you know, each team has 4 to 5 games left at least. And a lot of them are going to be at home. So that, you know, it's good. It's a good opportunity to forget the first half of the season and finish strong. But this is to me, John, as I was kind of sitting and thinking about this after the weekend, it's frustrating because, you know, only on the UPSL side are we seeing success, and the USL 2 squad is kind of, and injuries are pulling talent from the NPSL squad that could help us compete there. So as we shift to talk a little bit about that, if I'm being honest, I didn't really expect a victory against Med City this weekend, but I also didn't expect 5-1. And frankly,
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
you know, frankly, after watching that game, I think the organization may have expected a little too much this year from some of these MC2 players who did a great job in the UPSL last year. But just by virtue of maybe getting an extra couple games at, you know, at the MIAC level or something, were deemed ready for the NPSL. Like, we're learning that some of them are just not the guys that this team can start and hope to win games. I mean, maybe off the bench. Last year, or maybe off the bench in a different roster formation this year, they could they could be contributors, but not for 90. And I think part of that is, yes, part of that is the injuries and there's not a lot of options, but part of that is, I think there was just an expectation that they would have developed and they have not.
So I'm going to basically reiterate a lot of what you said, but I'm going to start off with saying, like, when you're talking about some of the group of players that I think you're talking about, sometimes it's better to go with the devil you know than the devil you don't know. Mm-hmm. when you're building your roster.
Okay.
I'm not saying they're devils by any means, but you know how the saying goes. Like, you're familiar with what the pros and cons are of a player and you know how they fit in, right?
Yep.
So that goes to what you were talking about. So I wouldn't say, like, you're in my opinion, what you're saying is totally true, but it's a good group of guys and a decent group of players to have around as squad members, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Lean on them for some experience. They've been with the club for a little while. They help fill out the roster. They help fill in maybe when there's, you know, an injury or a situational substitution. But you're right, to rely on some of the players for larger stretches of a season from a responsibility and due to circumstance perspective, that changes your whole makeup, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And they themselves then have to be the ones that step up and perform. And I think we've seen a few of those guys do that, maybe being cast in different roles and they're really successful at, but fighting like hell and trying to figure it out. And some of the guys that just got the stink on them, man, they can't ditch it. You're right. I think it's a case of, like, really good squad depth role players having to be relied on to start and win games against the top half of your conference.
Yeah, that's tough. And I think that's exactly what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
My worry, so now looking at the team holistically, well, first of all, really, really quickly, though, I think it what is tough is that there are some veterans like Baugh, Charlie Adams, guys that we've seen time in and out perform and kind of carry this team. Murakami has been probably the MVP this season. So for the NPSL level. And the thing is, you know, we're kind of it used to be that the roster makeup was so many more of those guys. And again, injuries have taken them out of commission, whether it's Aaron Olsen in a boot, whether it's Nick Hutton not being able to start, or
retirement,
right? That like now we're adding into the mix guys that are brand new to the program in some instances, but also guys that are kind of getting called up and asked to maybe contribute a little more than they're ready for. And that's tough on everyone. That's tough on the veterans who are like shaking their head, looking around, thinking like, what's happened to my club? It's tough on those role players who are, you know, under a lot of pressure. But the guys I really want to talk about are the guys that from a recruiting standpoint, like, what does this mean for some of these guys that we're plugging in that we were really excited about, really excited to get? I mean, you look at Jorge Pacheco, you look at who was our keeper on Saturday
against Zambetti,
who is like, he's the keeper for Virginia Tech, dude. Like, mm-hmm. You've got D1 talent that are making their city debut, that are showing up and trying to compete. And this Zambetti just gets hung out to dry. Martin Sanchez gets lit up. You've got poor Kalen Metis Castillo had a great game against Duluth and has been kind of, you know, seeing what a lot of the other keepers in the program have been seeing, which are just goal. Like,
yeah,
are these guys going to head back to school feeling good about the summer? Like, are their coaches looking for some positives from their players over the summer? Would they even come back next year if you could give them a call and invite them back? I don't know. That's my biggest worry.
Well, I'll split the answer to your question in two. That's always the concern, right? That players won't come back.
Yeah.
But wins and losses don't totally define your city experience in the summer. Okay. Yes, winning's great, but when you're training regularly, you're in an environment that offers much more than just soccer. You know, community things. Being able to come home, be with your family, maybe that girlfriend that lives here goes to the U, friends, be around the lake. It's a bonus.
Sure.
It's like a soccer vacation for you.
Okay.
Before you have to be literally an employee of a university, pretty much. Well, we'll talk about maybe NIL deals another day. But you get what I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. Like, before you have to go and play every single day while trying to go to school, you want to keep playing, but you want to be in an environment that, like, you actually enjoy being around. So I don't think that wins and losses define your experience here. But winners want to win, and they will see this as a down year. But with calculated changes in the offseason, this is all fixable. And as long as we as a club do that and players see that, I think we still have a shot at getting some of the best players and top level talent in the state. Plus, we have the relationships with the people they're close to, and they understand, like, win, lose, or draw, we're still a really good spot for their players, their former players. You know, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. I've already started having a few conversations with players about this season. Not like, hey, tell me what's going on. It's been more of like, what's up, dude? Like, we haven't checked in, like a check-in, right?
Sure.
And from what I'm hearing from most of the players that I've checked in with, and it's been a small sample size, I'm trying not to like inundate the guys, right? But I have to get through a lot of them by the end of the year, 50 to be exact. I have a month and a half, 2 months to get through 50 interviews. So what I'm hearing from them is that, like, what they're saying coupled with what we've talked about as a club internally and then externally with the players, they understand where and what needs to be fixed and where we can do that. So, like, mm-hmm. they get it. they also get like they got the stink on them that I talked about. Like, so on that end, I'm a little less. I'm not worried, but there's always doubt, right, that a player won't come back. You know, you look at a guy like Eli Goldman. Like Eli, Eli might not come back next year. This might be the last opportunity we have with him. Maybe he does come back in the year between his school graduation year and his last year of eligibility. Maybe he does come back to get something comfortable under his belt. Maybe put the armband on for the club. Maybe bring that brotherhood back that he learned when he was 19. You know, that kind of stuff. Maybe he does give us one more year. Maybe not.
Sure.
As far as the coaches go, though, Nate, the only negative in their minds is a player going to come back broken physically?
Okay.
Not mentally, because this is just, like I said, this is a soccer holiday for some of the players, the college players. The injury bug that we've had to date, fingers crossed, has only been minor injuries. That there's been precautionary reasons why they've been out a little bit longer because the TCO staff wants to make sure that they're fully healthy. These guys aren't coming back too early, re-aggravating injuries, because that's the last thing we want, right? So fingers crossed to date, minor injuries. So all of them will be fine when they go back. So coaches get it, and they know who we are from the relationships that we've bridged with them over many years. I also have exit conversations with them before their end of summer to let them know how their players did, my opinion on things, and let them know kind of where they stood this summer, what I think they could work on or what they didn't do based off of what the coaches told me they wanted them to work on, that kind of stuff. So I will have those conversations with them. But hell, dude, some of them have had worse years than we're having this summer and lost
these
jobs
coaches
because of it.
Sure.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So they get it. Like, you know, like it's not as big of a deal to them, to be honest. They understand it. They know we're here for the right reasons to keep their players safe, prepare them the best we can, that have them head back to the nest. So like, I'm not really worried about that piece of thing. Yeah, people are going to look at the losses this season and think, you know, they're not going to think that we're a worse club because of it. I don't think that. I think that we got to quickly course correct so we can be the winners we want to be.
Yeah, man. And that frustration is real, but course correction is a possibility. Both teams have real chances to salvage something from this summer as we come up. So take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but up next for City is a stretch of games that should yield positive results. In a normal reality, you look at the end of the season for the NPSL, Sioux Falls, Joy twice, Dakota and Aris. That is a great way to slide into a title. But,
<Right?
laughs> you know, obviously things that is not what's going to happen. But what does the NPSL squad and staff need to do to make sure that we can roll into July positively? You know, taking points, hopefully all three from all these games.
Get healthy, plain and simple. Get those cores we saw starting to form, that core, the NPSL core that we saw like starting to really look pretty decent together before we had to beg, borrow, and steal from each other. Honestly, man, we need the brotherhood to come back a little bit. We need to get that all for one for all grit back and take out our frustration from what's happened to date in the season on whomever is put in front of us. Get angry and not be so nice and not be nice.
Yeah.
Like, get mean, get pissed off. Like, it's okay. Like, I mean, honestly, that's what I would do. I mean,
I love that, man. Take out your frustration on the season or from the season on these teams, because these are teams that you should be able to do that with. I mean, Sioux Falls early, that was the first symptom really that like things might not be right when we had to claw back and earn a draw on the road there. You know, Dakota surprises us on the road and defeats us. What are the chances of that? I think Joy has been up and down, but I think there's a possibility there to lose at least one of those games. So if we go in mad, if we go in playing aggressively and like we actually want it, instead of like we're just trying to pass side to side and you know, bide our time, then I think we've got a chance there. On the USL2 side, we're about to wrap this season with a nice homestand of four games in a row. You know, we've spent a lot of time on the road, a lot of time in Canada, a lot of time in Illinois, a lot of time in Iowa. And I think that between Peoria, St. Croix, and the Canadian teams coming to town, I feel like maybe you, I wonder if you have you seen anything that can help us believe that we're going to see a W or two in there?
Same answer, Nate, really. Get the players back on the field from the IR, get angry, go out there and fight for the pride. I mean, the reality is, regardless if it's USL2 or NPSL, we have 8 home games for our senior roster moving forward.
Yep.
That's awesome. Do we have what, one away game?
We have one away game. Oh yeah, one away game at Joy on Saturday.
Yeah, that's it. One away game. That's it. The rest, all home games. We should absolutely be able to leverage the fact that we're home, but we have to get angry. We got to fight for the pride. We got to put the past in the past, move forward, all the cliches. But a clean sweep of all of, say we go 8-for-8 in a perfect world. Do I think that's going to happen? Maybe not. But say we even go 6-of-8 across all the senior roster. That's going to move the needle drastically in the form of perception of like how bad the season actually is versus what it could be kind of thing. You know what I mean? That's just fine. I think maybe it lessens the stink. We put some perfume on it, some axe spray. Get the old axe spray out.
I agree, John. Like, I think that if you think about wrapping up, I think the last 5 games on the NPSL schedule with a win, record doesn't look like bad, and we can say, yeah, we struggled in this year when we expanded to a third team. You get some wins out of the USL2 squad, and you can look back and go, you know what, there were a lot of those games we didn't expect to win. When, you know, our first foray into USL2, we're not going to dominate, and there was a steep learning curve, but we were able to scrap and earn some wins, earn some draws. You know, a totally winless season, Gonna feel a lot different.
Oh yeah, gonna feel a lot different. But so these games, Nate, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. That's today if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
6 p.m. against Sioux Falls. We typically always draw well against Sioux Falls. So get on out, folks. And then Saturday at 7 against Peoria City at home. Both at the Nelly. Head online, MPLSCitySC.com for tickets. I will not be on the Saturday stream. Nate's going to fill in for me. Nordo and I will be there tomorrow. We're ready to go up in the booth. We just need to translate that energy to the field.
Yeah, man. Saturday's going to be a treat. It's me. It might be me and Pribble.
Pribble's got COVID. So
no.
I just found out. So we need to find you another soccer guy. So we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Oh, man. Poor Adam. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this week's show, and thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. If you're in the market for that supremely curated soccer design on anything from mugs to shirts to prints, head over to footballstadiumprints.com and fill your cart up. And don't forget to use code CROWS10 at checkout for 10% off everything you purchase. All U.S. orders are shipping right here from the States. There are no pesky international shipping charges. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so consider beefing up that tax deduction and make a charitable gift to the club. If you're interested in getting a hold of us, the club, or the podcast, it's really easy. You can tweet at the club, at MPLSCitySC. You can tweet at our show, at The People's Pitch, or you can email us if you want, mcscpodcast@gmail.com. And that is all for this week. I have been Nate. That has been John. Hey, man, let's start playing angry. Let's get out there, ditch the Minnesota Nice, and take out our frustration on some of these teams in the NPSL North that we have remaining on our schedule, John.
Huff them, man.
Huff them all!